Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Friends with Friends. My name is Pete Allison and this right here is David Cribb.
Hello, good afternoon, morning, evening, good night and welcome to a quite husky, croaky voiced into that sort of episode where Phoebe loses her voice and it gets very sexy, I hope, but
Do you feel sexy?
In reality, I think it's just, I'm just ill, so it's not sexy or particularly useful for me, but I mean, chronology fans, this is the first episode that we're recording after our live podcast festival episode, which was the first episode of this season. It's very confusing, isn't it? But so that was probably 4 weeks ago now, but here we are 2 days later in real life time, as it were.
That's quite hard to keep track of, isn't it?
It's hard to keep track of and ultimately completely irrelevant to basically anyone, but it just hopefully...
Strong start to the podcast.
Really just explains my voice because I've been there all weekend and there's been a lot of talking and I had to do some singing yesterday on a different podcast. Oh, it's too much,
actually,
Pete.
Just to mess up the chronology, is that the word?
Yeah.
Order... even more, I opened my laptop and it's the first time I've opened this laptop since we recorded an episode. And as soon as I opened the laptop, what started blaring out from YouTube was Loretta's Trouble with Boys, which we referenced from the one with the routine. So I quickly wondered why all that music was coming from my laptop and then I realised what it was.
There you go. Great, great. The only time anyone ever listens to that song ever and it's only that one chorus. Should we meet today's friend, Pete?
Yes, I think we should.
It is the wonderful comedy writer and lovely man and also a man with another side job, which we will become relevant in a moment. What a fucking slick intro that was. Hey, Jack Bernhardt.
Hello.
How are you?
Hello. Good to be here.
Thank you for being
here. I'm a massive chronology fan. Huge chronology fan.
This is good. Have you kept up with it? That's the first thing.
What, the chronology?
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure when in time and space I am. I'm not sure what I can mention.
Sure. No, that's fine. Let's keep spoilers.
Who's the Prime Minister?
Live spoilers. Okay. I mean, we can't even worry about that. Honestly, this will be out for probably another 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay. Oh, wow.
It's
okay.
Very hard to.
We will never know.
We'll have been through 4 or 5 by then, I imagine.
Also, by saying that Jack has a side job, you've made it sound like it's some sort of, I don't know, illegal activity. It was very
vague. We could delay revealing what it is for as long as possible, just to up the tension.
Yeah,
that's good.
I mean, normally I'd be very happy to do that, but the problem is it's very relevant to the podcast, and I'd like to discuss it. So if you don't mind, we'll ruin the mystery immediately. So you... As
Gunther in Friends.
I did, yeah.
You have changed, but you haven't aged.
I'm not. I haven't done the bleach blonde anymore. No. That's the thing.
Tell us what your side job. Side job, such a
side
weird
job, it
phrase,
is,
isn't it?
I do promo making for Comedy Central, which involves a lot of Friends watching Friends editing.
You make the trailers for Friends,
making
basically.
The like me and a team of another 5 or 6 people.
That's great.
It is. It's a lot of fun, genuinely, and I say that with a smile on my face and a song in my heart. I do really enjoy it. It is a lot of fun, but it means I have a sort of love-hate relationship, I think, with the show. Not in a properly hate way.
Just in that sort of way where you work in an ice cream shop and you don't want to eat
ice
cream.
And by the end, you're like, I just can't stand. I don't want to eat any more chocolate chip. I couldn't think of any ice cream flavors. I was really struggling for a second.
Vanilla.
I hate the vanilla ice cream. I definitely work in an ice cream factory. Yeah.
So in our sort of text-based pre-conversations to this, you reckon you've seen every episode of Friends at least how many times?
Well, I thought about this after. So I said 10 times originally. Yeah. Okay, I think what's actually, because I thought about it later on, I think what's more likely is I've seen every episode twice, but about 20 episodes about 20 or 30 times.
Okay.
Purely because those are the ones that get promoted, and those are the ones that, because Comedy Central will do like stunts where it's like, this is your favorite Friends episode, and it's always the one where they're not ready.
Yeah.
The one with Ross's tan, or the one with Ross's teeth.
Right.
And so you end up watching those ones over and over and over again.
So there's like a sort of an A-list, basically.
Yeah, they're sort of they're usually around, I mean, you get quite a lot from season, because I know there's a big season, there's a season 1 to 5 divide.
Yeah.
And there's a season 5 to 10 divide. And I know that you are on the, Dave, you're on the season 1 to 5.
I'm the earlier, yeah.
I would say season 5 to 10 gets more play.
And really?
Gets more, yeah. The one with Ross's tan is a hugely popular episode.
Right.
It's often at the very top of the list.
I can actually believe that they get more play, because they are the ones you definitely see more. And
they look better.
They which, look like yeah. television.
They look like TV, yeah. Which I think is, yeah. The other stuff doesn't look like TV.
The old ones still do look like someone's putting in a VHS and pressing play at sort of Comedy Central HQ.
Like an old Charlie Chaplin. Like there should be a guy playing the piano alongside. Yeah.
Everything's
because
a bit wrong.
E4 used to show them sort of chronologically, didn't they, mostly? So you'd get them in order day by day. You'd go through the seasons. But Comedy Central don't do that, do they?
I think, so it's weird, because I think Comedy Central has a way bigger turnaround. So, like, right. You'll get, they're showing it from, I don't know if this is quite right, but something crazy, like from 10 till 3, they'll be showing episodes of Friends, and then again from, like, 5 till, I don't know, 7 or 8. So you end up going through quite a lot of, because that's, you know, 10 till 3, 2 episodes.
That's 10 episodes, that's, yeah.
Yeah, you're basically getting through half a series every day.
That's so you, it,
and it is, like, genuinely, you will, like, you'll turn on, I mean, if it is going, I think, at the moment, they're doing it chronologically because it's the Friends 25-year celebration, and we're all delighted to watch more Friends, and we're celebrating the fact that they're, you know, that we're showing every episode. But they do them chronologically, and they do go through like ruts. But yeah, the ones early on, season 1 doesn't really seem to get much of a play. 2 will get a bit of a play, but then it's basically 3 till 10
three
will
onwards.
Get the most play.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, and yeah, I guess it does make sense of the ones that just look more recent.
But I think because they've spent not to go too much into like how much they spent, but
please.
Obviously, because there was a big thing about how much Netflix spent to get the rights for streaming, and everyone was like, why have you spent so much money? And it was a similar conversation as to why Comedy Central has spent so much money to get the rights for this show that is genuinely 25 years old.
Right.
And obviously it's doing very well streaming-wise, and a lot of people watch it still, so it's sort of, they think it's, you know, actually, I don't know. I don't know how Netflix works, so I'm not sure if it's helped their revenue or if Netflix are about to implode. I don't know.
Right. No.
I have no understanding of what's actually going on.
Well, I'm continually fascinated by Netflix in the same way I am by like the BBC license fee.
In that
my brain can't compute how I pay like £7 a month and they make Stranger Things and then like 50 other things. Do you know what I mean? I'm like,
and you're sort of like, is that good value? I mean, I guess that is good. That is good value.
I feel like
but
it's
also
good for me, but in my brain, they must have 9 billion people paying that. And it's just like, I can't make the maths work in my head.
And it's like also why, because I don't think anyone's gotten Netflix for Friends, but I think a lot of people would not cancel Netflix because they don't want to lose Friends.
Right.
So I think that's probably where they, because people go like, oh, I'll get Netflix for Stranger Things. And then they go, oh, I can watch Friends whenever I want, which means I can just sit here and watch Friends.
But it's not like a royalty system, isn't it?
No, I don't think
they're not tracking like how many people watch Friends and then something, something, something. You know, I can't quite work out.
It's one of those like blackboards that says like how to make money. 1, do Friends.
Yeah.
2, ? 3, profit.
It's exactly that.
None of it makes sense to me. But the interesting thing is that they paid all this money for it, and they've also upgraded it. So it looks way better than a lot of shows that were made around the same time because it's on
film.
I
always think when you're watching HD, it looks surprisingly clear given it obviously wasn't made with that technology.
Well, weirdly, I think it wasn't made with that technology, but they filmed it on like film, which was much higher end than any other show that was going on at that time, with the idea that in the future they probably could upgrade it, which is crazy. And it's sort of... So it was originally like... when it was played out in 4:3. I'm going into aspect ratio.
Chronology, aspect ratio.
We're hitting all the the hard topics today.
It's already my favourite episode of this podcast.
But genuinely, because the... So 4:3, obviously, it makes it really hard to promote or like to show... Like 4:3 shows that go on TV now look really weird because they've got big black bars on the side. But Friends, even though it was, you know, it went out in 4:3 for the majority of its run, it was filmed with widescreen in mind so that it could be upgraded later on.
It's like incredibly forward thinking.
It's hugely forward, but also meant they spent so much money on it, as in when they were first filming it, with the intention that this will run and run and run.
They basically filmed it for a thing that didn't yet exist.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. And then because we get all these little now bloopers where a woman playing the part of like a Monica body doubles in the what was the out of shot for 4:3, but is now very much in shot for widescreen.
And people are like, how did they not spot this? Yeah. Like, well, that was because that was where your TV ended. Yeah, you did not see that.
Wasn't on the television. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's very strange. So this is another thing that you brought up in our pre-show chat was a game you play.
I realized again I oversold this. What I do is it's how many of the interstitial stings can you recite and sing with no memory from not from watching the show, and I think it's only possible to do about six. I probably can't do six now because I always I feel like it's like there's only a certain amount you can put in your head because it's just guitar licks.
Yes,
but the one I always go to start with is
great,
which is a classic.
That wasn't the one that immediately came to mind for me.
Exactly, which I think everyone has different ones because then you say it to other people and they there's do 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 do, which again is one that you don't really think about that often.
What's yours, Pete? What's your go-to one?
That is good.
That's a good one.
That is good. And a couple of the interstitials in this podcast, they're ones that I hadn't thought about for ages.
Yeah, so basically, this is, again, a very unnecessary behind-the-scenes look into the podcast. When we first started making the podcast, I think I made four. I think I've got four of them. I was like, this is a great plan, Dave. What you'll do is every, like, 2 or 3 months, you'll just make, like, 2 or 3 more. And then we'll have this big bank of them. And then two things happened. One, I just didn't. More for just not laziness, just never quite got around to it.
I also think that you'd sort of get to the point where you're like, why am I doing this?
Well, A, why am I doing this? And B, they're surprisingly hard to locate.
Yeah.
So I'd go to like YouTube and try like Friends things. No, there's nothing on there. There's like two on there.
I'm happy to do as many as I can think of right now.
Yeah, that'd be good. And then I can just go and recreate them from my brain later.
Wait, have I already done this one? One goes down now, down now, down now, down now, down.
Yeah, cool. That's great.
Because that's a really that is one that you then start thinking about. And there's like a later season one, which is basically just like a guitar. And now I can't think of it. But if I just start, I sometimes going dun 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 dun. Wait, no, that's a set that I've already done that one. The dun 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 dun. Yeah, okay.
yeah, that's the.
They're hard. They're really hard.
They are. I wonder who made those.
I don't know.
Imagine it wasn't the Rembrandts, because that's in your brain. You'd be like, oh yeah, get them to do a few stings while they're in.
Yeah, because the Rembrandts. This is a very segue conversation.
You can't go too mad deep on this podcast. You can't.
I heard the Adam Hess episode. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I know it very well. But the Rembrandts, they originally only did the chorus, didn't they?
Yes.
They just did the chorus, and then it was so popular that they wrote the rest of the song.
Yeah.
And that's why it's sort of the second half of the song is like, where is this going? I don't really. Yeah.
It's absolutely mad, that second verse. I'm now at a stage, I think, 25 years later, when I can just about do all the words to the whole song. Just from various...
I mean, I feel like you have to now.
At the radio station that I work at, they played the Rembrandts in full today, and hearing the second verse is always very unsettling because it's lyrics that you are largely unfamiliar with compared to the ones you've heard literally hundreds of times.
You're still in bed at 10, but work began at 8. You've had your breakfast so far. Things are going great.
Yeah. Of course you know it.
Your mother told you there'd be days like these.
Days like these is really weird because it's sort of, it feels weirdly like ominous.
Yes,
like your mother sat you down one day and said, honey, there will be days like these.
and you can read really dark things into it until you realise all it was to do is to rhyme with the word knee. In the next line, which is days like these, but she never told you the something the world had brought you down to your knees.
That's still pretty intense.
Yeah, it's a bit mad, isn't it? Your mother told you there's be days like these. Never told you the world had brought you down to your knees. Yeah, mad.
The lyrics that we are familiar with, they are also about saying, God, isn't life shit?
Yeah.
But at least you've got your mates.
It's like a Cheers, like, because Cheers did that first. Well, I don't know if they did it first, but that whole, like, oh, everything's terrible. Go to the pub.
Yeah.
It's sort of like that, but for people who go to coffee shops instead.
Right, exactly.
In the 90s.
Something, though, that people that have joined this podcast maybe halfway through, or maybe, I think this is the second episode of the podcast ever, Pete, in the one with the blackout.
Yes.
There is, for my money, the most bizarre Friends interstitial sting.
Oh, have you?
Which I flagged to you.
Yeah.
When we were texting, and I don't think you'd even clocked it.
No.
Do you remember this, Pete? Do you remember us talking about this?
Yeah, but I can't remember what it was.
Well, I'm just going to play.
Oh, isn't it just someone singing?
Yeah, it's a one mad. You'll know, but I've got to just play it off my laptop, so hopefully you'll be able to hear it. But it's
it's bizarre,
isn't it? Mad,
it's absolutely bizarre.
So you sort of know that tune, but then for some reason, that's like the seventh episode of Friends. They went, let's get a doo-doo-doo guy in to do a bit of Over the Topsies.
And they did it once, and we're like, no, never again. We cannot do that again.
It was obviously some sort of inquiry. Yeah. They just went, no, he is never coming back.
He can't come back. My friend at work, like, played it to me today, being like, have you heard this?
And I was really?
Like, yes, I've only just heard about this. And it sort of became, it's like, now it's spreading around the office. Like, there's a doo-doo-doo interstitial.
It's really, I couldn't locate it. I had to clip that out of our podcast when we talked about it last time, because it took me so. Again, I started watching the episode and, like, trying to jump between scenes. And it's like,
they've wiped it from Netflix.
It's impossible to bloody find it. Anyway, look, chronology aside, and stings aside, and all the other sort of mechanical rights, all that sort of stuff we've been talking about. Should we talk about your episode?
Yes, please.
Which is?
The one where Ross finds out.
The one where Ross finds out. So you've gone early.
I've gone early. I was thinking about, like, what I think of as iconic Friends episodes. And to be honest, it is later, usually, like, season 4 onwards, because I think I grew up watching those ones.
Right.
Like, the ones where they go to London.
Yeah.
And I was very much like, oh, Americans have come to London.
I think that was one of the first ones I probably ever saw as well.
I think it confused me because I was like, are they always going to be in London?
Yeah.
Turns out, no.
No, never again.
Never again. They got rid of the only British character as well. They were like, nope, she's gone too.
She is, and rightly so.
Go. This was actually because I was thinking about what I should do, and I ended up doing a stunt for Friends recently, and it's because it's 25 years, it was the dates, so all of the best dates episodes from Friends. And this was one of those ones that I had not forgotten about, but sort of just like it was just in the back of my memory, and I'd forgotten how good it is and also how important it is.
So date wise, this is Rachel's date.
Oh, this is Rachel's date, with Ari Gross.
Yes. Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great knowledge.
I was growing up with the Ellen sitcom. Do you remember the Ellen sitcom?
I mean, I remember it existing.
Yeah.
I could not tell you a single thing about it.
I watched it, I was like, oh, well, yeah, I remember him, I recognize him. And yeah, he was like Ellen's love interest for 2 or 3 seasons, and then not.
They're not.
For perhaps obvious reasons.
Yeah, so is that...
It's very weird.
Did the chronology of that sitcom
sort
of straddle?
So I this is, again, feels like a massive... Well, it's not really because he's in the episode, but Ellen used to be called, I looked this up, used to be called Friends Like These, and it came out in 1994, in March 1994. They renamed it Ellen after the second series because of Friends.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
That's mad.
It's really weird, because also it implies that Ellen wasn't the main star of it, when actually, because again, it's that weird thing of Friends was the first sitcom that had, didn't have like a star, it had six stars.
Yes.
And I think that they were possibly trying to do that with Ellen. And if the show had been called and continued to be Friends Like These, perhaps Ari Gross. I'd forgotten his name immediately. Maybe
These Friends of Mine.
These Friends of Mine. Oh, okay.
In my head, Friends Like These, I think that's the original name of Friends.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's where I've done. Yeah,
there was these also Friends an like Anton Deck TV quiz show called Friends Like These.
There's a what?
That sprung to mind. There was an Anton Deck quiz show called Friends Like These.
Was there? Oh, there you go.
And yeah.
It's been overused, that title, if anything.
Yeah, that's mad,
isn't it?
It's very weird. And then, I mean, obviously the show ran for four seasons, and then Ellen came out, and it sort of completely changed.
So the series straddled Ellen coming out, basically.
Yeah. Well, I went down a rabbit hole of YouTube.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, Ari Gross, what's he up to? And then watched like the episode where Ellen comes out. And it's amazing. Oh, it's so weird because that's like 1998 when she comes out. And like you're thinking of what Friends is doing at that time. And it's Friends is in London. It's just kind of like this weird like chronology of like sitcoms that are happening at the same time.
Right, it is. I mean, this is... So yeah, I'm trying to get my head around.
Okay.
So there's a sitcom. No, but because if you really think about it, what's happened is a sitcom in which originally it wasn't even called Ellen.
Yes. Has then become the Ellen show.
So originally I guess Ellen wasn't playing herself, as it were. Do you know what I mean? She's playing a character.
She was,
in an ensemble sitcom.
Yeah.
But then the character's
sexuality
has reflected the actor's sexuality midway through the shooting of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, which then made like Ari Gross, who was set up as the love interest. Yeah. He was like, well, I'm no longer the love interest.
Now,
I'm redundant. And the show was sort of like struggling for like a reason to exist.
Right.
Spin-off podcast idea. The Ellen podcast.
The Ellen podcast. I'm here for it. I don't think I've ever seen an episode.
I used to watch that and Will and Grace and Friends all together. Oh. And they were all around the same time-ish.
Yes.
And there were always like lots of reruns on.
Will and Grace I used to watch when was on Channel 4 back in the...
And Frasier.
But that's kind of fallen off my... radar completely.
Well, that's coming back to Comedy Central, so...
There you go. Good.
Putting that plug in.
Keeping
away.
It very corporate, aren't you, Jack?
Oh, thank you.
So let's do your episode then.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. Don't worry. Don't worry. Sidetracks ahoy. Season 2, episode 7, the one where Ross finds out. Here's the Wikipedia synopsis. A drunken Rachel is persuaded to call Ross and reveal her feelings for him on his answering machine. When he finds out, he must make the choice between her and Julie. Meanwhile, Monica finds work as... Well, this is incorrect, isn't it? Finds work as Chandler's personal trainer. No. She's not being paid. And
also, Rachel isn't persuaded to phone him by anyone.
Very odd use of the passive form there. Do not enjoy that.
And Phoebe has a hard time trying to get her boyfriend to have sex with her. Not a guy she's dated, just a guy she likes.
Yeah.
She seeks Joey's advice. Ross and Rachel argue. Ross says he's not leaving Julie at the end of the episode. Ross and Rachel kiss. I feel...
Basically,
like
that bio is a shambles.
That's an absolute shambles.
If you've written that and you're listening... Shame on
How
you.
How dare you.
But on the plus side, Pete, directed by our good friend Peter Boners.
Peter Boners.
It's lovely when Peter Boners makes an appearance on Friends with Friends. So we've got our three plot lines as normal. So we've got, I feel like this is, even though there are the sort of traditional ABC plots in this episode, it's like 97% Ross and Rachel and Julie.
Well, interestingly, yes, except it takes a while for that to happen.
Yeah.
The episode like treads water for like a couple of scenes. You're like, where's this going?
Yeah, because the whole first two or three scenes is Chandler and Monica, and Chandler's put on some weight. And then, but that's that storyline and the Phoebe and Scott storyline. Yeah. Basically, yeah, like you said, they start and then they just go. They just disappear for about 15 minutes. Where would you like to start? Where should we start?
I think let's go chronologically to match this episode and start with Chandler and Monica.
So Chandler and Monica. So this is interesting. So I'm sure we've all read the same sort of things, but this is apparently the storyline.
Oh, I actually didn't know that.
Where the producers and the writers were like, Chandler and Monica.
Really?
They have chemistry. So this is the first time they'd done a big sort of storyline together, and they were all like, guys.
These are the guys.
This is the ones.
Because they do, I mean, there's still quite a long, like, so end of season 4 is when they get together.
Yes, so crucially, they basically, I mean, this is all internet hearsay, yeah, potentially completely nonsense, but supposedly what happened is they went, guys, Chandler and Monica, we should get them together. Mm-hmm. And then everyone else was sort of like, yeah, but we just got Ross and Rachel together. So they delayed it a season to stop it interfering with Ross and Rachel.
Oh.
Which is interesting.
But that's like,
it?
That's quite a long, because there's still, cause there's actually a lot of good. I quite like this episode because it's a pre Chandler and Monica, Chandler and Monica story.
Yes, yes.
That's yeah, they're quite not fun. A very common pairing before the them actually getting together, are they? It doesn't happen.
And then when they get together, it's not the best.
Yeah, it's very weird because it's sort of, this feels like a really good pairing, like as in when they're together platonically. Yes. Because this is their relationship in this one is very funny.
Yes.
And very, and well, at times very sweet and at times very sad.
There are some offensive. Incredibly,
very dark,
incredibly insensitive moments in.
It veers wildly. This one,
it really does, and it all starts kind of strangely, doesn't it? So Chandler comes in and basically, this is one of these great friends things where they reference that he's been to another party.
Who was at that party? Yeah. Who could possibly have been at that party?
Who was hosting that party? Yeah. How did he get an invite? Why was he the only one there?
And also it must have been like a romantic party because he's looking for women and they pass through him.
Yeah.
I hope it's sort of like an Eyes Wide Shut situation. It's just never referred to.
Chandler says that he is repelling women, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Chandler isn't repelling women because he's put on weight. He's repelling them because he is wearing a cardigan that looks like it could be used as wall insulation. It's that thick.
That is true. He comes in dressed like an 80-year-old man and says, yes, what's wrong with me? And everyone's like, it's because you've put on weight.
You're fat,
like,
mate, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the not even the elephant in the room, really. It's like the very lack of an elephant because he is so... well toned, like he's an attractive man in his prime. He has not put on any weight.
There's a lot of awkwardness also around Chandler's weight later on because of the whole, you know, drugs and rehab and stuff. So it does feel like one of those precursor things where you're like, he isn't, is he? But if you think he is, then this is going to get problematic because
see, you imagine him in season six, lads.
Yeah,
you know, it's
boy,
it's very odd. And there's a slightly strange. So Phoebe goes, oh, you know, you've put on weight. I always get like this, and it's a bit awkward. And then Monica volunteers to be his personal trainer or whatever. And then there's a strange joke that Phoebe does where she sort of goes, oh, I should never have said anything. And you think, oh, we're resolving it. And then she goes for a hug and does that thing where she goes, oh, I can't make my hands meet round your back.
Yeah.
Which is really odd.
Really odd and really, like, not, it's sort of mean, but also not like, oh, that's so, like, everyone's reaction is, you've absolutely nailed it, Phoebe. Well done, you've done it. Whereas actually, like, it's like, oh, it's kind of gross and sad. And also, that's not how the girth works.
Crucially, the physics is all off.
Yeah, the physics is and that's the one thing I look for in every Friends episode. It's accurate physics.
So this is all the pre-credits roll.
Yeah, pre-credits.
And then we get this is again going back to watch season two of Friends, the first establishing shot after the credits. Did you notice it?
Oh, 9/11? No, or the Twin Towers? Yeah,
okay. Twin Towers.
Yeah, oh, that's another game, but that's less fun that you can play whenever the Twin Towers are on TV at Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot, and they do not cut it at all from any of the reruns and any of the. It's very weird.
It's still incredibly jarring just to see sort of a completely nonchalant establishing shot.
Yeah, like there it is. There, yeah, deal
Twin
with that.
Towers, front and center, there they are.
It's very. I read a lot of things about this. Is again a massive skirting away tangent. That's the word. That talked about how like little Friends did. I mean, they probably should. You know, you don't want to like associate with, you know, the Twin Towers, but there was very little like that Friends actually did
to market
or to do any, which is kind of weird because when you think about the show, it's, you know, 94 to 2004.
Yeah,
like at its very peak is when 9/11 happens. It's very weird. They are just, apparently there was one joke that they took out of a, like them going to the airport for Monica and Chandler's honeymoon. I read this ages ago, where it was like, Chandler was like, oh, he said, I've got a bomb. And they had to cut that because I mean, you know, obviously you would.
Yeah.
But it's just odd because like a lot of, I mean, that must have been very weird because the whole show is like New York centric.
Yes.
There is one episode, isn't there, when there's a tribute at the end of it. There's like
is that? Oh God, you're right.
There's like a black screen. I can't remember what it says, but it does. It says something about it's in tribute to the people of New York or something.
Yeah, but it's very. But I can't remember the episode itself being anything. It felt very like.
Oh no, yeah, it's not related to the episode. It's just.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah. I'm not saying they should have had an episode. The one with 9/11. That would have been truly terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all agree. But yeah, and I guess you sort of you go well. There are ways of doing it, and there's the sort of famous misfiring West Wing episode where they really address it, and everyone goes,
and everyone's like, "Oh no,
dreadful and patronizing and awful." But yeah, it is looking back now with the hindsight and the perspective, and all that time having passed, it's mad.
It's just very. I mean, because like, I mean, it is an escapist show, so I suppose. But then, oh, it's just so hard to know how you. I mean, whether you do it or whether you talk about it, it's very. Yeah,
I found some. Quotes from Kevin Sprite on this. Would you like them?
Always.
Shall I? Okay, let me re-say that so that it can be edited more naturally.
You know, I'm just going to leave this in, right?
Yeah. Oh, this. Yeah.
Shall I just make it? Is there even any point me pretending?
No. Say it again. Say
go
it
on,
again.
Try it. Go on. Yeah. Give it a go, mate.
So I've just found some quotes from Kevin Sprite where he talks about.
Oh, that's 9/11. Interesting.
It Have is you? Interesting, isn't it? And how he says that Friends is synonymous with New York City, obviously. He said, because we realised that we were not a topical show, we didn't want to do a very special episode of Friends where they're all distressed about what happened and trying to deal with it. That just wasn't what we thought the show meant to the audience. We felt we were comfort food, and during this time, if anything, we should be funnier than we've ever been.
Interesting. So
yeah.
I mean, it's a hard thing to know what you should do.
There's definitely a logistics issue in the sense that
So that would have been 2001. Would have been
season seven,
eight. Apparently, yeah. Friends' eighth season premiere. The one after I Do aired on the 27th of September, and also dedicated to the people of New York City.
Okay, but yeah, I mean, with any sort of sitcom like that, you know, it'd be hard to wrangle an entire episode that week and go, let's pop that out next week. But that is what happened in The West Wing, isn't it? They shot a sort of chronology
like
episode. So much
chronology.
Fucking chronology in this episode. But yes, let's shall we say this podcast's official stance is to forgive them.
Oh yeah, entirely
for not marking 9/11.
Yeah. What? How have I got to this point? Yes, I'm so sorry.
How's this happened?
How can I mean? What other atrocities do we want to go into?
Let's talk about Chandler being fat.
Okay, yeah, that makes more sense.
Which is also an atrocity because he is not fat. So I mean, this is a very strange one because in my head, so there's two or three scenes at the start of the episode when this happens. Monica, and it's basically the same scene over and over again. Yeah. Monica comes around, goes, hey, let's go for a run. And Chandler goes, no,
I'm tired.
You witch, get out of my life, basically.
Which is it's such an odd thing because I was watching it. There's a bit where he talks to Joey and he's like, she's insane. Yeah. She's making me go training all the time.
Yeah.
The montage was going down the stairs in little gym shorts.
Yep.
Chandler's so tired that he gets into a taxi while Monica runs on and he does 2.5 sit-ups. Yeah. That is it.
It's a slow jog.
It is.
And yet it's later claimed that that does actually help him lose weight.
Yeah, like she's doing great stuff for him.
Yeah.
And she is also not, she's not like, she's really positive. She isn't, it isn't someone being like, you know, like a drill sergeant. She's not like waking him up out of bed.
Right.
Like she's being helpful and
I'd
nice.
I'd be thrilled if someone was basically offering me free, like effective weight loss solutions.
But I'd be, and also I felt like, because there's a bit where she's like, look, if you want to stop, we can just say stop. And he goes, stop. And she says, no, but it's not like, no, how dare you? I'll never stop. It's just, you know, no, we're having fun.
Yeah,
get on the energy train. Toot. Like, she seems really up for it. And really, she's dedicating her time to helping him in a way that seems really nice.
Which makes the way that Chandler eventually gets out of doing exercise incredibly mean.
Oh, God, it's awful.
It's a real, it doesn't sit nicely with me at all, that scene.
It's really, really horrible because, well, it's like a complete character assassination, isn't it?
It's so like brutal, and it's like Welcome to the Dark Side from Chandler,
right.
Where he's like, oh, don't make me do something I'll regret, which is, you know, she's been like, hey, do you want to go for a run? And he immediately like finds the worst aspects of her life at this point and like drags her into the depression. It's
awful. He doesn't want to go on a run with her, so he drags up the fact that her parents would be incredibly disappointed if she told them that she'd lost her job.
And she doesn't have a boyfriend.
Yeah, reminds her she doesn't have a boyfriend. Oh, she's unemployed. Her parents are disappointed in it. It's really strange.
It's real,
makes it all the more weird if the writers saw that and thought, they make a great couple.
Exactly! It's so... this is the thing, is I can't understand how they'd be like, oh, brilliant, I'm on board for this.
Yeah.
Get the Mandler train going now.
Well, even the sort of immediate aftermath of that is mad, because this incredibly cruel scene plays out, and then Chandler dances off to the Nutcracker suite into his bedroom,
which, if you think about it, there is the Nutcracker is not playing because Monica has just gone to sleep.
Yes,
so he is just dancing around and then jumps very violently back into his bedroom.
Very odd.
Super weird.
No, it's very strange. And again, with the way it all plays out in the episode, we've not heard from them for about 12-15 minutes.
You have there's a big gap, like, isn't there?
You have the first like 4 minutes are all to do with nothing else. No other storyline. This is definitely I'd say there are two C storylines rather than there being a B and a C.
Yes, because
it's
definitely.
Like, these are so like classic. Nothing happens in
joint
these.
Third place and then first place.
First place, very much. Yeah. There's basically the exact same scene happens, as you say, where he's like, it's God's day, I don't want to... It's the same scene that happens at the post-credits. It's such a bizarrely structured storyline.
Mm.
There's one really good bit of physical comedy that I really like, where they have their little slap fight outside.
Oh, outside Central Perk.
Yeah, that's great.
Silent comedy.
Silent comedy, which is really... like, that, again, is that bit where I was like, that's not the point where I'm like, these are a good... as a, like, Chandler and Monica are good as a couple, but more just, I like seeing them together.
Yes.
Platonically.
You're right.
And, like, later on when they do the whole, the one in the beach house where with the jellyfish.
Yes.
Like, that, it sort of feels like a precursor to that, where they're sort of, like, matey, but, you know, like fighting each other a bit, but sort of bantery. I like that relationship a lot.
Yeah, it's great. It's really good.
In a way, it's quite sad that it gets, like, ruined by... love.
Doesn't love just ruin everything?
Love ruins everything.
Oh, what a shambles.
But even that bit ends with him, like, Monica accidentally shoves him over and then goes, oh, and then Chandler gets up, looks really menacing, and Monica runs away with the implication that Chandler's gonna attack her? And it's like, oh, great, great jokes, great banter. Yep. Can't wait for these two to get together.
Exactly. And of course, we have the classic. Ooh, this was made in the 90s, wasn't it? The Chandler's doing the sit ups, and Monica says,
oh, God.
You know, do five more and I'll flash you.
Yeah. No. That, again, not great.
No.
Although the joke, show me one after 2.5, is like, it's again one of those things where you're like, the joke is horrible and depressing and sad, but the structure of the joke works.
Yes. Yeah.
Do we give credit for that? Probably not.
No, it's hard to tell, isn't it? Where it's hard to. It was of its time.
Yeah. Oh, very much so.
That's basically our party line now. It was of its time, guys.
Brian and Roger met at a support meeting for divorced men. Both are starting again.
Hello, Roger. It's Brian. Thanks for helping me move in.
Both are finding it hard.
Hello, Brian. It's Roger. Yeah, no problem about helping you move in there.
One of them is nice.
Good morning, Roger. It's Brian. I had that dream again about Carol Kirkwood.
Brian and Roger is an addictive and hilarious podcast sitcom from Dan Skinner from Angelos Epithemiou and Shooting Stars and Harry Peacock from Toast of London.
Great Big Owl.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Phoebe and Scott, then. Should we move on to them?
Yeah.
This is, again, a really weird one, isn't it?
Very strange, tiny plot line.
This feels super weird because it starts off quite progressive in an odd way.
Right.
In the sense that often with Friends and sitcoms in the 90s, like, the default is women withhold sex and men have to trick a woman to get sex.
Yeah.
And women don't enjoy sex, but they can use it as currency.
Right.
That's sort of like the default thing for most.
The television
idea.
Representation,
like,
yeah.
Like, if you're good, I'll give you sex.
Yeah.
And the husband's like, oh boy, sex. But this is quite... It starts off quite interesting where Phoebe's like, why won't Scott have sex with me? Why won't he give it up? Which is quite an interesting way of phrasing it as well. Like, that Scott is withholding the sex.
Right.
Which I feel like in early 90s terms is quite progressive.
Yeah, definitely. It's flipping everything on its head, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, quick sidebar. If I said to you before we'd watch this episode again, tell me who Scott is in Friends. I'll tell you the character name Scott.
Yeah.
And you tell me who that is.
The unseen boyfriend of Phoebe.
That would have taken, I don't think I would have ever got it. Ever.
It's a real, like, which is a shame because, I mean, there are two different ways of reading this plot line. And one of them, Scott, comes off very well. And the other one is sort of the way it seems to be read, which is that he's an evil man.
So that's how the whole thing resolves, with basically Joey going, this man's my hero because he got you to persuade him to have sex with, you know.
Yeah, so Phoebe is like, oh, I finally convinced him to have sex,
yeah.
And don't worry, I said to him, you don't have to call me, you don't have to do anything, we don't have to be in a serious relationship.
Yeah.
And Joey's like, wow, this guy's my god, and Phoebe feels really dirty, and it's a really sad bit where she's eating a cookie and feels dirty.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
That's the sort of 90s alarm bell goes off a few times in this episode, but you're quite right, because this whole thing had been set up so differently to the norms of the time.
Until Joey says, this guy is my god, and points out that if this is Scott's plan, if Scott is slimy like Joey, or slimy like all men, then this is a great plan, and he's done it to perfection.
Yeah.
Then it's really sad and depressing. If Scott is really genuinely, like, believes what he's saying, and is like, I didn't want to hurt you, and, you know, I wanted us to have a connection beforehand, then Joey has basically just ruined this relationship.
Yep, completely.
It could have been really good.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, because I think when watching that episode for the first time, and obviously I can't remember when that was, but even when watching it again for this, you kind of don't realise Joey's take on it until he says it. It doesn't enter your head that that might be what's going on there, and that he's a bit of a player, whoever this Scott guy is. And like, you don't understand. You're very much siding with Phoebe and just not really understanding why it's not happening.
It's not like Joey's excuse is so good that you're like, oh, there we go.
That was
what Scott was doing.
Yeah.
It's definitely one of those things where you're like, oh, I suppose that's what it could be.
My watching it back was just, oh, Joey's a scumbag. That was it. My take on it was, of course Joey would see that in it.
But then Phoebe seems to, like, instantly be like, oh, that is what Scott must have done.
Yeah, it's concluded that Joey's right, because we never hear from Scott again, do we? So
they're doing a lot. I mean, maybe we do. Maybe Scott is constantly mentioned for the rest of the show.
We've just forgotten about Scott.
With his with the really weird erection joke that's made midway through. Yes. Oh god. That's a bizarre
very
joke.
Friends, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's that one?
It's
I felt it on my hip.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Oh my word. Like, it's very like, oh goodness, okay.
Well, this comes off the back of another Friends 90s ding-a-ling thing, which again could just be read as like, oh, Joey's awful. But it was the immediate reaction of Joey when Phoebe was like, he hasn't had sex with me. He's like, well, he's probably gay then.
Yeah.
You know, like, proper, like, 90s.
Yeah.
He must be gay. That doesn't even make sense, because, like, why would he be...
Why would you be going out with, yeah.
Yeah, why is he like, there if that's true?
Yeah. Well, no, obviously all men have to date women.
Yes, of course.
That's the rule.
Yeah.
I did like the Phoebe's, he's not British line, which is when it's
that's
like,
a real, yeah.
That's
yeah.
a cracking
so
joke.
So Joey says maybe he drives his car on the other side of the road, if you know what I mean. And the way Lisa Kudrow delivers that line is brilliant. Like, he's not British.
It's sort of like she's just trying to process it at the same time. It's just so well done.
That is like peak Phoebe as well, isn't it? That sort of not quite getting it and just being like dismissive at the same time.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. But then again, this is such a little C storyline, and that's kind of it.
That's
isn't
sort
it?
Of the way it's done. It's like, oh, that's the end of that thing. We're never going to see Scott ever.
Poor old Scott.
Could have been Phoebe and Scott instead of Phoebe and Mike.
Yeah. So, yeah, Mike's lucked out here.
Yeah.
From Joey's terrible friendship. The headline plot then.
Oh, the hugely important plot.
I think we're into this now, aren't we? So there's two strands to this almost, aren't there? So it splits off into sort of Rachel and her date and then Ross, Julie and the
cat.
Nah.
The cat that they were getting.
Yes.
That is canonical.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're to understand that, what, approximately 6 weeks into their relationship.
Yeah, must be about 6 weeks, because
it's episode 7, thing, so I guess, you know, if we're
getting a cat.
If we're to presume it's one episode per real week.
Yeah.
Which is probably still even a bit
which
long.
Which is about right. Although, I was thinking about it recently, sorry, this is to go back to...
Chronology.
Chandler talks about how Monica has got him doing butt clenches at his desk at work.
Right.
As if to imply that this exercise routine has been going on for...
Like days,
like
weeks.
Like eras. Yeah. Like he is 6 months through this. So actually, who can say?
Yeah, that is true, actually. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe Ross and Julie have been going out for 5, 6, 7 months.
Yeah, that's true, because... I mean, over the course of the episode, I don't know how much weight Chandler is supposed to have lost.
Yeah.
But he definitely, at one point, she says 3 pounds to go.
Yeah.
And then another one, just one.
One pound, you got the last pound. That is.
That's not a day, is it?
Yeah. And that's terrifying weight loss if it is. Yeah.
Really quick.
That's liposuction.
Exactly.
Courtney Cox is doing that.
So it's probably to believe that he's lost 4, 5, 6 pounds over the course of this episode. So yeah. That must be longer than a day or two.
But then it is weird because that is sort of the idea. It's like, oh, it's week by week. It must be.
Yeah.
But Friends chronology, it's time is elastic.
I feel like no matter how long it is, it's still. Still too soon to get a cat.
Oh, far too soon.
Well,
but also,
Ross isn't a stranger to diving in headfirst to relationships, though, cos Emily. So it's probably quite in keeping with Ross's character that he gets a cat after like 2 days.
He's not a stranger to diving in and getting an animal for no reason. So,
I mean, to be fair, true. We could say, in Ross's defense, at least this is an acceptable domestic pet.
This is not. It's a very weird relationship where they're like, oh, he's going to let the cat will live with me for half the time and with Julie half the time.
Yeah.
You know,
incredibly.
That's what cats in New York love to do. They love to take the subway.
So this sets up, and we reveal that Rachel's on her date.
Yeah,
she's going to go on a date that night. There's some very good. Across this storyline, there's some excellent Jennifer Aniston sort of frantic lost acting.
She's brilliant in this episode.
This is one of my favourite Jennifer Aniston
episodes.
And
ditto David Schwimmer. There's like the scene where Ross finds out.
Oh, the scene where Ross finds out is
like
wonderful.
Schwimmer masterclass. We can come on to that shortly. But so when Aniston finds out about the cat, though, and she's holding the tray and she leaves Central Perk and she darts back in and, we're not supposed to take these.
That's such a weird line.
Yeah.
That I can't. I mean, it's a brilliant line. She delivers it really well. It's the type of thing where I almost wonder if it was improvised. You know, when you're sort of like, I wonder if that was... Because it's that one of those things where she just leaves and then goes, they're not supposed to take these, and puts the tray just down nowhere. I don't know. It just feels like such an odd thing.
Yeah.
If you wrote that on the page, you'd be like, no, that can't work.
There's a few things in this episode like that. And we'll come to a couple of lines where you just go, if you were just writing that and go, that's my final script.
Yeah, there we go. Done and done.
We're not supposed to take these. What?
Yeah, you'd be like, okay. No, that's...
How's that made it to the final draft?
It's a real... I mean, that scene is wonderful where she says, I've got a date.
Yes.
With a man.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful performance from Jennifer Aniston.
What I would say... We do hit the limit of with Aniston's acting at a certain level. And maybe this is just my opinion and you don't agree. Aniston's drunk acting is quite something. And I do, like, in her defense, I feel like she veers from some really good convincing junk acting.
Yeah.
But at times it's woeful.
At times there are some real missteps, I think.
Yeah.
I think that one of the problems is there isn't a gradient. Like, she doesn't have like a sort of, because it's just that scene, she sort of has to go like, I start off a little bit tipsy, I drink quite a lot, and then she is full blown drunk.
Yeah,
because
like, basically the second time we come back to the date,
she's pouring wine into her,
the empty bottle. It's all gone.
It's all.
She's like 100% drunk.
Yeah, it's like there is no further you can go here.
Yes,
there are some bits though that I really like when she does her drunk acting, when she talks about, God, you're brilliant. How do I get that very quickly? I like her little jumps to. From things, she seems to be all over the place, which I quite enjoy.
Yes, no, and I like that. And there's the fruit fly.
Fruit fly is great.
Really
what are they called? What are they called? What are they called? What are they called? Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, no, there are definitely some great bits of it.
And the you're being kind of weird about your phone to the phone guy.
The phone guy who is a an American stand-up.
Oh,
called. Oh, I'll get this.
His big break.
Barry Diamond.
Stage name or real name?
Oh, it's hard to tell, but Barry Diamond.
If you got the name Barry Diamond, you're going into stand-up comedy.
The thing about that moment in the scene, though, where Rachel, she borrows a phone, doesn't she, from someone on the next table, Barry Diamond, on the next table. Yeah. But Barry Diamond's date looks more offended by Rachel asking to borrow the phone than she does by the fact that Barry Diamond's on the phone at dinner.
I found that so weird.
Like, it's
also,
Rachel that crosses the line, not him.
It looked like such a long conversation the guy was having. He was like, yeah, and she seemed to be like, this is just a normal date for me. Sitting across from Barry Diamond as he talks about his...
It was almost like, I mean, he could have just been out to dinner on his own.
Yeah.
There was no need for her to be there at all.
Do you think she's only there for that reaction shot?
Maybe.
To be
in the background.
He says that it's to look offended. To
otherwise,
be like,
Barry Diamond's
God.
Having dinner on his own, isn't
it? Yeah. But I mean, Barry Diamond having dinner on his own is fine, but you don't have a good shot of Barry going, what? Whereas with her, you're like, this woman's so drunk and she's out of control.
I've become a bit obsessed with Barry Diamond, guys. I'm not going to lie to you. I've been on barrydiamond.com most of the afternoon. Okay.
Is he still working?
He's still gigging.
Of course.
He looks like this now, Jack. I'm going to show you a photo of Barry.
Oh, no.
Barry, yeah. He looks like...
Oh, God. Who does he look like? He looks like someone.
He does, like a game show host of some sort.
He does.
Or kind of...
Who's the... Oh, God. The dad in A Star Is Born. Oh, God. What's his name? You know the...
In the new one?
In the new one, yeah.
Oh,
Lady Gaga's dad.
I haven't seen the new one.
And he's like
I'd
a comic.
Imagine it was him.
Yeah. He looks terrible. He's sort of wearing like a sports coat as well.
Yeah, it's great.
He's wearing a tracksuit.
Adidas tracksuit.
He looks like he's about to be taken out by Monica on a run.
His about page, barrydiamond.com/about.html is... I could read this all day. There's... The first line is Barry Diamond, November the 14th, 1951, ? So already
that is setting up your own mortality very much like you got to that thing and went, oh no, when will I die?
Yeah, exactly. I'll just pop a question mark for now. Born and raised in a small log cabin is the next line. I mean, it's everything is great.
That's the only kind of comic I see are the ones born and raised in small log cabins.
Barry Diamond could have chosen to do anything he wanted to do. He could have been a great teacher or financial wizard or a priest or a shepherd.
Or a higher profile stand-up comedian, but seemingly he chose not to be.
Instead,
I went for a mediocre to middling stand-up comedian.
Instead, he chose comedy in spite of his actual talent and experience with sheep. I mean, this biog is wonderful.
That's great.
I'm really... But then it gets... You know, we always have this thing, Pete, don't you? Where you go, oh, now it makes me feel a bit sad because it goes, Diamond's credits are impressive. He has appeared in... Friends is the first thing on his credits list. But I mean, that is a small part in Friends.
Yeah, but he's being kind of weird with his phone. That's great.
Yeah, he's being kind of weird with his phone. But he's in everything. He's in Seinfeld. He's in Curb. He's in Politically Incorrect, which comes before Curb Your Enthusiasm, despite... I'm not sure if you're ranking those four shows.
Unless this is, again, chronologically.
Yes, maybe. Maybe it is. I would encourage you all to go and read it. A paragraph...
To go see Barry Diamond?
Go and see Barry Diamond if you're ever in New York.
Yeah.
A paragraph much further down the page. Mr. Diamond is an American first... A comedian second, and a loving single parent to the most beautiful cat and dog, Charlie and Princess Diamond third. I mean, what a strange way of ranking yourself. And then the very final one, and I promise this will be the end of Barry Diamond. Mr. Diamond is available to perform anywhere in the world, and most recently, has performed inside the volcano on the Big Island of Hawaii for Brian Cohen's bar mitzvah.
The Big Island of Hawaii. I like how he's felt the need to talk up Hawaii there.
I'm obsessed. I'm absolutely
that's
obsessed.
That's fantastic. Oh my
obsessed
God.
Obsessed with Barry Diamond.
And it has to be inside the volcano. Yeah. That's the...
Oh no.
He's performed in lava.
Upcoming shows. No shows booked at the moment.
Oh, honey. When do you think that was last updated?
I don't know. But there you go. Barry Diamond. I think we can move on from Barry, who's got the phone. The other sort of Friends problem is we seem to be in the era of time where mobile phones were commonplace.
Yeah, but...
But scarce.
Yeah, to the fact that you would see a businessman with a mobile phone and then immediately flag them down.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Like someone with a homing pigeon, where you'd be like, good sir!
Yes, exactly. Very odd.
It's a real like device. It feels like a
yes.
Like a...
And this whole plot line could only have played out in that very specific era of telephone communication, because the whole reveal later then comes because Ross has to dial into his own voicemail from Monica and Rachel's apartment.
Which actually comes up in a lot more sitcoms than I feel like it must do in real life.
Well, it's in Friends as well, with Monica leaving Richard and accidentally changing his message, which even that is... That's the one where no one's ready, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even that is quite... complicated to try and understand given the technology.
I'd go as far to say that Friends might overuse the device.
A very specific device of
collecting your own voicemails remotely.
Yeah, it's a real, like, they must have thought, okay, we're onto something, like, guys, we'll be the sitcom that does this with our voicemails.
Right, well, I wonder if in the spirit, you know, maybe in that way that they were like, oh, we'll film it in widescreen for future. They were like, do you know what's going to be huge in about 2 years, guys, is dialing your own voicemail from wherever you are.
Yeah.
So we'll be the guys that really get a hold of that first. So Rachel's on a date. She's doing her drunk acting. Mm. She leaves the voicemail. Mm. I mean, Rachel is atrocious on this date. This is the worst date a human could ever possibly go on.
It's horrible. It triggers so quickly. Like, she just immediately says, like, how long do cats live as a question? And it's like, I feel so bad for Ari Gross, who's just sitting there being, you know, they specifically say that he hasn't been on a date like since his divorce, and he's going on this date. And she, I mean, it's just, it's wonderful in many ways.
Because there is a moment where you feel like she's gone, oh God, I'm being awful. And she goes.
And she doesn't, but she doesn't like have any kind of self. She has
she
like.
She doesn't change her behavior after making that realization, does she?
It's a very weird decision.
She goes, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm just obsessed with this thing. Anyway, let's be normal. Have you ever bought a cat with a girlfriend or something? And it's like...
And then later on, it's like, oh God, I'm being terrible still. And you're like, it's been an hour and a half.
Yeah, we're already through dinner and starters, mains, drinks, whatever you're having. Michael says no to dessert very quickly, and understandably so.
In a classic, like, no! Yeah. Oh God, imagine!
Save me from
the very idea! But in another way, it's very good performance. He does a sort of hammy, like, no! Yeah. No to dessert. I mean, you wouldn't. You'd just be like, no, it's okay. Yeah, thank you. I'm fine. I mean, that's just quite a British thing. Maybe in America they do theatrical no's for desserts. That's the only way they'll let you get away.
The chronology of then the next morning interests me. And some would say we spend too much time analysing the chronology of Friends episodes.
To those people, I say, get off this podcast.
This is immediately following the scene, the first time Monica goes round, say, early in the morning to get Chandler before work, right? So it's before work.
Yes.
And at the same time, as Monica's nipped out to get Chandler for a run, Ross has come over to pick up some cat toys.
Yeah, so why did she... Yes, that's bizarre.
And it
You're
must
right.
be very early, because Rachel's sitting there downing aspirin as if she's just woken up with a hangover. Mm-hmm. So Ross is coming at, say, 7 a.m. to pick up cat toys on the way to the world's earliest opening cat store to buy a cat with Julie, who's downstairs flagging a cab.
Flagging a cab, which takes a while, obviously.
Yeah, a real long time.
A really long time to flag a cab in New York.
And also, it's... this might just be my own sort of anxiety in that type of situation, but if I had flagged a cab, I wouldn't then want to walk to the buzzer, like, to buzz someone to come all the way down from the top. I mean, that's too long to wait.
Julie is very chill.
Very chill.
And you can, she, from the whole episode, she seems to be chill throughout the whole show.
Yeah.
Like, she gets her heart broken by, I assume she got her heart broken. She dates Russ later on as well.
Yes.
So I assume Russ breaks her heart as well.
I think they live happily ever after, maybe.
Yeah, that's how that ends, isn't it? She ends up with Russ.
I think that's the implication, that they live happily ever after.
I don't know. I feel like Russ can't make anyone happy.
No, he's a dreadful, dreadful character.
Russ is an awful character.
I'm going to go out there and say that, guys. Russ isn't, for me, a particularly realistic character. Could just be Dave Quinn, but you never know.
But she seems completely like fine with the whole thing. I would be very much like, you said you were going to pick up the cat toys, because logically, Monica wasn't there. Like, Ross was supposed to go in, get the cat toys, and then go.
And leave, right.
And instead is like, I'll check my voicemail while my girlfriend, who I'm buying a cat with, waits downstairs
like, with a cat. Oh, I know, very odd.
Very weird.
I think this, you might have texted me this as well prior to this, and I can't remember if you have.
Oh,
but
I think, yeah.
Ross's delivery of...
That might be the big... Jennifer Aniston's drunk acting and general performance was like 90% of the reason. And then the final 10% was when they buzz the... Oh, God, when Julie buzzes. Yeah. And he goes, oh, it's Julie. Yeah. And then runs over having been freaked out and goes, hi, Julie. Yeah. And Julie says, I've got the cab. And he goes, I'll be right down.
Yes.
That's my favorite Ross line in the whole show. It's just amazing.
I'll be right down.
I'll be right down.
So good. It's so good. Because this is like, we're right in the middle of this like Schwimmer masterclass of like... completely lost in this world.
A complete manic meltdown. Yeah.
Yeah, just a complete meltdown. Oh, it's great. It's wonderful to watch.
Oh, it's such like a it's someone who has just realized they have to pretend to be normal for a couple of seconds.
Right.
Being like, oh, hello, yes, I'm a regular person now.
Yes, exactly. In the midst of Ross's meltdown is another one of these lines we were talking about earlier where you think, if this was just the line they wrote down on the page, it's weird.
Yeah.
But when Rachel sort of goes, well, you had feelings for me first, Chandler told me. And Ross goes, when did he? And it's so great.
It's so great because there's not even like the, it's not a, oh, when did he, like, it's not as if he's accidentally repeating it. It's like, I must ask this three times.
When did he?
You're like, it's got such a great rhythm. I mean, it's such a good David Schwimmer performance.
Did
it's
you
so
notice
good.
What happens at the end of when did he, though?
No.
This is potentially too niche even for us, but David Schwimmer then mouths, when did he, twice more, silently. And I had to rewind it and double check that I'd watched it. So he goes, when did he? Basically.
That works well on the podcast.
Yeah, really good. Really
no, but
good.
I love the little, oh, when did he?
I watched it maybe 10 times.
I think
I just kept going backwards and going, this is just something.
I'm going to have to rewatch that.
Yeah.
Because, again, a big part of promo making is you need bits where they aren't mouthing things.
Right.
And that's genuinely the most frustrating thing, when you can see someone mouthing something. Because if you hear that and you... Because you can't be like, oh, they're not actually saying anything. So, you know, it's fine. Because if you see someone mouthing something, you immediately assume that just the audio has gone out.
Right.
So if David Schwimmer going, when did he? is not going to be useful for anyone.
No, for no one.
Oh.
But you'll go and watch that back.
Yeah. Nice ASMR.
Yeah.
From David Schwimmer.
And my final Schwimmer excellent moment is when he is leaving. He just shouts the word cat.
Rachel. It's so weird because the other bits have been so good. When he says cat, the actual phrase of the, like, saying cat is very weird.
Yes.
To the point to the point where I'm like, oh, is that, like it's good, but it's sort of
out of the blue.
It's out of the blue. And then the sort of, it's mostly just the staring her down and then slowly backing out. That's just, oh, what a, I mean, again, it's one of those things where you just must have imagined they go like, okay, just act this thing out.
Yeah.
I mean, we're also skipping over the iconic line, you're over me, when were you under me?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, that, genuinely, that scene is probably one of my favorite Friends, because it's such a big moment in Friends history, because it's the first point when both parties know that they are, you know, that they like each other. And it's also really, really funny, which is one of those things that actually a lot of these times, like Friends, I think later on, it becomes like, the scenes are either dramatic or funny. Mm. And actually, that's one of those ones where it's like, oh, the balance here is perfect. Like, yeah. When she's jumping on him and like trying to wrestle. Yes,
it's physical. It's so wordy. It's like everything's good about
it's
it.
Just,
isn't it?
And like that thing of the, I've got a message from you. Yeah. Hey, who's Michael? And yeah. you can sort of hear the, because also when the audience are, when Ross says, oh, can I check your messages? Can I check my messages? I haven't been home. Yeah. And like Rachel goes, oh, sure. You can hear the audience go, oh no. Which is so nice. It's like there's a dialogue between the audience and the cast. It's great.
So watching that play out, like that's a proper farce, that bit, that tiny bit, isn't it? And then it moves straight into that. And then she's jumping on him. And
it's wonderfully done.
It's really well done, isn't it? It precedes then the sort of, what is supposedly the big iconic moment. And I think this was voted like the sixth most iconic moment in all of TV or something ever.
I find that baffling.
The kiss.
I think actually looking back on it, all three of the storylines have pretty strong starts and then the final scene is rubbish and lets it down. Because this makes no sense. Like, their conversation is sort of like a meta thing of saying like, why didn't you ever tell me? And oh, lots of things came up, like Italian guys. And they have this like blazing row, like really angry thing where they're both like, look, I'm just gonna bottle it up. Okay, well, I'm just gonna bottle up as well.
It's over. Yeah.
And then close the door, and then you're like, okay, that must be it.
Yeah.
And then the he just turns up again.
Yeah.
And then it's like, what?
One of the strangest things, which, given it's a scene that, as you say, we've seen hundreds of times, and particularly because it's used in like the clip show episodes of Friends as well, so you see even more. There's one line that Ross says that only when watching it this time did I think it was odd. And he says, you had no right to tell me you ever had feelings for me. Which,
I thought that as well,
it's a really odd thing to say. Like, why? Because he's
why
with
Ju-
Yeah, why? Why is to say she had no right to say it is a really strange line.
I think they really screw up the landing here at this because they've built it up so well, and this is much angrier than it needs to be, and it comes from such an angry place from Ross that is sort of understandable. But if you want them to kiss at the end, he can't be that angry.
Yeah,
no, or the kiss has got to come in a really organic anger passion. Fusion. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's weird that it dissipates.
Because
it's
all the anger goes as well because she can't open the door. And that whole, that is, you'd assume, put
it
there to kind of diffuse
so
it all, doesn't
long.
It? Yeah.
And also, because she closed the door really quickly and then it's like, oh, he can't quite, it's a mess of a scene, really. It's like a real disappointment because often, again, when you're comping and like putting stuff together for promos, it's sort of like, oh, I need a good line that shows how much Ross and Rachel love each other. There is no love in that scene.
No.
It is really angry and hateful. And I think their feelings are just based on like not being able to be with each other. That's the only intensity that they get.
Right.
It's quite sad. It's quite a sad scene.
There's one line I really enjoy in amidst the anger and mess of it, which is just, it's quite a throwaway line, but it's a good, lovely David Schwimmer bit where they're arguing about, oh, you had no right to tell me, or when would I have told you? Things kept getting in the way. And she goes, oh, yeah, you only had like a year when we hung out like every night. And he goes, not every night.
That's a great bit.
It's really well delivered.
It's a really good bit.
And it does puncture the tension slightly. You know, there's a really nice moment there for a second.
Yeah, it is really nice. And it's also one of the things where you're like, I mean, he, again, as you say, like, you have no right to, he has absolutely no right to be angry here because he did have 365 days. Oh my God. Just nonsense.
Then there's the kiss with the incredible U2 sound alike.
Doesn't count as an interstitial.
It's not.
Yeah, it's just a proper... I mean, it's there's a lot of weird music in this episode.
Yeah, that one is, again, internet hearsay. Apparently they wanted to use With or Without You by U2.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't get the rights in time.
But apparently they then used it next episode.
In the next episode,
which is bizarre. The idea that they would be like, oh, week by week, we don't do our like song clearances months in advance.
Yeah.
Like, what is going on? Where they're like, oh, we'll just use it next week. We'll have another scene where they're kissing in the rain.
Yeah.
Oh, right. And that's the list episode. And that, yeah. Again.
Yeah, that's when it all goes to shit, isn't it? Yeah. It's an intense... My girlfriend hates this era of Friends because she can't... She finds it too uncomfortable to watch the Ross and Rachel sort of... falling out and the
They're
just never really that happy, are they?
No, they're not. This is the thing. They don't get happy really until the lobster thing that's later on. That's like another 3 or 4 episodes. The prom video.
Prom video, yeah.
Which is like, that's the first time when I feel like there's some genuine kind of connection and love.
Yeah.
But this is all very like bitter and sad.
Very odd.
And yeah, because he sort of, again, then the way he sort of like measures her up next episode with versus Julie versus Rachel, it's like, oh God, I don't know. There's not a good basis for a relationship here.
No, absolutely
sad.
Can I talk you through the deleted scene in this episode?
Oh, yes, please.
Slash, it is on the DVD version.
Okay.
The deleted scene is in the pet shop.
Okay, amazing.
And there is a whole scene where Ross is trying to choose between two cats. And the setup is like, oh, but I like them both. And which one will I choose?
Subtle.
And there is a line that is, I think it's the, but they're both beautiful and funny. And I think I'd be happy with either. And it's mad. But my very favorite thing about, and then there's another weird bit where Julie says, oh, we could get both cats or something. And Ross says, I think he says, oh, that's like something Joey would do.
Like, oh, God.
It's really odd.
Imagine if you were Julie being like, uh-huh?
Yeah.
Does Joey like cats?
Have you gone mad?
Yeah.
I wonder why it got deleted.
Well, I think both content-wise and the fact that the person that plays the pet shop owner, and this is mad trivia, but the person that plays the pet shop owner is called Fritzi Burr. She plays the pet shop owner in this scene. She also appears in The One with the Stoned Guy, playing Mrs. Tedlock, Chandler's secretary.
Of course.
She also appears as Mrs. Weinberg at Barry and Mindy's wedding. And she also appears in The One Where Nana Dies Twice as a guest at the feud. She's in 4 different Friends episodes.
Identity
as
fraud.
4 different characters. So maybe they were just like, do you know what? She's had her fucking cake by now. She is out of here. What absolute madness.
That's crazy.
But there you go.
Other actors.
Bit of the trivia. One of the quick trivia fact for you. First use of the word Gunther in Friends.
Ah. Really? Was it to refer to Gunther?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, good. It wasn't just like, I've got a bit of Gunther on my shoe.
Rachel says goodnight, Gunther. And thus far.
That's such a throwaway line.
He's only just been man that works behind coffee shop.
Yeah.
Okay, very quickly, we must do the lightning round.
Okay, here we go.
Which I think you'll do very well at, and you've referred to some of them already. Question one, what's the full name of Monica's cat?
Fluffy Meowington.
Very good.
Rubbish. Absolute rubbish.
Terrible name, but also we don't have time to talk about, when did Monica have a cat?
Yeah, and apparently another episode, she is allergic, so none of this makes any sense.
Mad.
Terrible.
Absolutely mad. When did Monica have a cat? Got it. Question two, Pete.
Question two, what did Joey say to Chandler the first time he saw Phoebe?
Oh, God, it's awful.
Awful 90s alarm.
It's something like, excellent rack, nice butt, or something like that.
Excellent butt, great rack.
Okay. What makes it worse is that Phoebe is genuinely flattered by this.
I know. Oh, it's just a bit... Ugh.
The only thing that slightly saves it is that she says, officially, I'm offended.
Yeah.
But weirdly, that feels a bit like, oh, I've got to be offended.
I've got to say, yes. It's very
strange. But I'd rather have fun and say that I'm happy.
Yeah. What is Joey watching on TV because he can't find the remote?
A rabbi playing the electric guitar, which feels like such a 90s thing.
So 90s, isn't it?
Do you think, again, they were like, in the future, everyone will have widescreen TVs, voicemails that you can access anywhere, and rabbis playing the electric guitar will be everywhere.
It's mad. It's so great.
Question four. What are the 3 things that Ross claims got in the way of him and Rachel getting together previously?
Italian guys, ex-fiancés, and Italian guys.
Correct. Word for word. Yeah.
That's 4 out of 4 so far, mate. And this is a time one. What time is it in the final scene when Monica comes over to get Chandler for a run?
Oh, God. Is it 6:30?
It is 6:30.
Oh, yeah.
That is a full house. Wow.
Watched it twice on the way over.
And 94 times in the last year.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. I mean, if you hadn't got full marks in the lightning round,
I would have been fired.
You would have been fired.
I would have been fired. They would listen and they'd say, no,
I'll be sending this directly to your line manager.
Thank you so much.
Jack Bernhardt, thank you so much.
No, thank you so much. This is such a wonderful podcast. Thank you for having me.
I
loved it.
it's been great. I've genuinely absolutely loved it.
Oh.
It's been lovely. See you next week, Pete. Bye now.
Goodbye.
The
very much forgot to record the end bit for the next episode, didn't we? Very professional, I hear you cry. You're quite right. So it's just me here to tell you what's happening next week. But to make it seem like we're both here talking to each other, I'll find a clip of Pete saying something like, yes, and, you know, I'll just drop it in at some point. Isn't that right, Pete?
Yes.
Good news. So next week's episode of Friends with Friends features the writer and part-time wrestler, indeed, Lexi Rose, and she's chosen Season 4, Episode 13, The One with Rachel's Crush. Season 4, Episode 13. Go watch it. See you next week. Bye, Pete. Say yes again.
Yes.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.